Take that!
Welcome to Hunting Humbug 101 with me, Theo Clark. This episode is an original episode recorded with my father, Jeff Clark, in which we're looking at sanctimony. I got to say, this was certainly one of my favourite episodes that I recorded with my dad, Jeff, not only because of the amusing clips we listened to and talked about, but also because I think it all captured Dad's pretty great sense of humour. So, yeah, I hope you enjoyed as much as I did re-listening to it.
Welcome to Hunting Humbug 101 with me, Theo Clark, and I'm joined with my father, Jeff Clark. G'day, Dad. How are you going?
Hi, Theo. Well, thanks.
In today's podcast, we are going to look at the fallacy sanctimony, and we'll begin, as per usual, with a reading from our book.
Sanctimony. Other terms and or related concepts we use. Sententiousness, seizing the moral high ground, moral posturing, holier than thou, self-righteousness, priggishness. And the description we give of sanctimony, the advocate represents his or her position as morally superior to the opponent's and links this by implication to the correctness and validity of the advocate's position. This is a fallacy when the supposed high moral ground is merely asserted or appropriated by the puffed-up advocate rather than legitimately acquired through reasoned argument. Most sanctimonious claims to the moral high ground are either deluded or self-serving. Deluded prigs are often unable to recognise the circularity of their claim to moral superiority, viz.
I am morally superior because I am morally superior.
The preening and morally superior advocate may be attempting to avoid scrutiny of a weak argument by placing a taboo on the opponent's position or by ruling out his or her line of argument beforehand. That is, the line of argument taken by the opponent is deemed to be beyond the pale, and could not even be considered by any, quote, right-thinking person, unquote.
Note that some sanctimonious advocates may be well-meaning but unable to distinguish between what ought to be true and what is true. See wishful thinking and argument to consequences.
Example. Orson Pecksniff is the host of a syndicated radio talk program which goes to air live between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. on Sundays. Orson's producer is Jerry Ovaldheim, a like-minded inhabitant of the same inner-city boutique suburb. On their promotional website, Orson and Jerry assert that they are both committed to a cutting-edge program which fearlessly engages with difficult social and political issues in order to secure social justice for the underprivileged. In fact, the featured guests are carefully selected to ensure that their views are in direct accord with those of Orson and Jerry. Orson's interviews usually amount to nothing more engaging than amiable conversations with a sympathetic guest.
Tonight, Orson is interviewing Gene Streetwise, who has written a book called The Perils of Colonialism. Orson has prepared for the interview by scan-reading a précis of the book prepared by his research assistant. He launches into the interview with his usual self-confidence. However, it soon becomes apparent that Orson has misread the situation. The title is in part ironic, and Gene's wide-ranging treatment of the topic is critical of both colonists and critics of colonists. Further, she makes the case that the wealthy middle class is currently colonizing the inner-city precincts of capital cities. In so doing, they are advantaging themselves at the expense of the urban poor. She finishes by declaring,
"Inner-city suburbs are colonized by individuals rather than nation-states, but the process is still about the dominance of the powerful over the powerless."
Orson back announces Jean and her book, waits for her to leave the studio, draws a breath, recovers his composure, and then editorializes. "Well,
Jean believes that something can be said in defence of the European colonial powers who engaged in a savage war of conquest against native peoples. Such a position is so self-evidently obnoxious that it doesn't deserve to be taken seriously.
Comment. Orson is entitled to disagree with Jean, but his position cannot be credible until he has carefully considered her arguments. His dismissive statement is without merit. It clearly positions him as an empty vessel, full of sound and fury, but signifying nothing. His instinctive response to discomfiture is ego protection. His sanctimony is shallow and visceral rather than well-founded. The seeker after truth will recognize this type of blustering response as a feint designed to let the poser off the hook. When sanctimony is encountered in a discussion, the debunker will call the bluff, label the tactic moral posturing, and press on regardless. Okay, so that was sanctimony from the book. And the reason why I chose sanctimony this week was because, Dad, you referenced South Park in last week's podcast about, you know, the environmentalists that can become quite sanctimonious. And I almost put it in there, the clip from the episode called Smug Alert, where it's about people who drive hybrid cars and being a bit smug about it and so on. But I thought, well, that's just such an obvious example of sanctimony. So I thought, well, I'll save that up for when we do sanctimony. And I couldn't wait. I thought, well, let's do sanctimony today.
Excellent.
But it's also because one of the our most common targets, and certainly of the producers of South Park too, is people who you know, put themselves up as kind of being holier than thou and better than other people, and so that's why we kind of describe ourselves as iconoclasts. And being iconoclastic was certainly a term you introduced me to it, so I thought I'd let you explain that to people.
Right. Well, the origin of iconoclast is a smasher of images. So the early iconoclasts were people who went around churches smashing images because of some belief about not praying to graven images. So its origin is a bit different to the way we use it, or very different to the way we use it. But as breaker of images, we're sort of looking at ideas or people who are put on pedestals and seem untouchable, and it seems as unseemly to attack them or to challenge their ideas. And we actually are attracted to such targets. So we're more attracted to the people who are held up in high self, in high esteem, or who themselves have high self-esteem, in order to undermine, well, their sanctimony and the sanctimonious views of people who hold them up as exemplars to us. Yep. Because we see everything as potentially having clay legs. But it's not that we're engaged in the popular Australian sport of lopping tall poppy.
That's
tall
what I was
poppy.
About to say. Yeah, so we sound very Australian, don't we?
But it's actually because of their unwarranted influence. So if a person is held up to be an exemplar, and they are an exemplar, I don't mind. I just leave them alone and say, you know, good on you. But if they're held up as an exemplar of how the rest of us should behave, or they're saying that they are, and there's no basis or justification for it, then my attitude
fair
is
game.
Certainly iconoclastic, and they're fair game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's certainly what attracts me to South Park, is their same kind of attitude. They started off being quite vulgar, I think, just for the shock value, and they still have the shock value, but now they're quite satirical and quite they make a lot of political statements, and they're hardcore skeptics as well. They didn't really realize they were what they were doing. But I mean, if you've seen any of their episodes on, say, the Mormons or Scientology, or on, John Edwards, the cold reader, and so on, you know, they are definitely iconoclasts, and they're without a doubt skeptics as well. So, you know, John Edwards is the biggest douche in the universe. If you haven't seen that episode, you certainly must. But yeah, this one is from the clips we're going to look at initially in today's podcast, from, again, South Park, and from the episode, from season 10, episode 2 called Smug Alert. And it's kind of, it's not anti-environmentalist, it's anti, sanctimonious environmentalist. And given we kind of were a bit like that last week, I really don't want people thinking, oh, no, here we go, we're just a couple of right-wing death beasts, which is, sometimes people think that just from reading our blog too, but our website too, but I think that that was just the nature of where the fallacies were coming from, certainly in Australian politics. They were coming from the left side of politics when the left side was in opposition, and now that the right side of politics is in opposition, you have already found they're tending to be the ones making the more dodgy arguments. I think that's just the nature of being in opposition. And it's the same with the environmental type people too. A lot of people talking sense, but because it's so such a big thing, you're going to get those kind of extreme people making a lot of extreme statements, and so that's where a lot of fallacies come from. And certainly the whole sanctimonious posturing is very much something that can come from environmental type people. It can come from in many walks of life, but these are just such easy ones to find, and I'm quite familiar with South Park. So that's why I've chosen it, not because I'm a right-wing death beast.
Now, the other thing there to mention, I have heard the lads that created South Park in conversation is one of the extras on one of their DVDs, and they do say that they really hate the right wing.
Yeah.
And then they add that, but they hate the left wing even more.
Yeah, yeah.
And really, that's my position.
Yeah, yeah. I think I agree with that pretty much too. Yeah, and they also hate actors. That's something else they say.
Oh, yes, yes, they hate. They hate actors, and I must admit that that does appeal to me as well.
Yeah, and I have
people who make a living from saying other people's words.
Yeah. No, I don't mind them doing that as long as they just admit, yeah, all I do is say the lines. That's fine.
Yeah.
A la season two of Extras, and I'm going to find a way to use that clip from that in our podcast in the future. If you haven't seen the show Extras, you must. It's brilliant. Okay, let's get back on topic. Yeah, so the first clip I'm going to play from South Park, and I'm going to break it up and explain the plot a little bit, otherwise it really won't make much sense. I'll put a link to the Wikipedia thing of the storyline as well, but you should, you know, get it out and watch it yourself. So I'll play the first clip now.
Hey there, Richard!
Oh, hey, Gerald. New car?
Yeah, it's a hybrid. I just couldn't sit back and be a part of destroying the Earth anymore.
Well, good for you.
Oh, thanks!
Well, there goes the new high and mighty Gerald Broflowski.
Yeah, ever since he got that new hybrid, he thinks he's better than everyone else.
You know, the emissions from a vehicle like yours causes irreparable damage to the ozone. I drive a hybrid. It's much better for the environment. Thanks.
Dad, can we go home? All you ever do since you got this car is drive around and show it off.
Hey, is that a hybrid?
Oh, yes. You've got one, too, I see.
Yeah, I like to be a part of the solution and not part of the problem. Well, anyway, good for you.
I'm starving to death.
Hold on, boys. We still have to go to the hardware store and hand out awareness citations to SUV cars in the parking lot.
What?
Okay, there's another one. Oh, man, look at that. Can you believe this? An SUV with a V8 engine makes me sick. Ticket for driving a gas guzzler.
Dad, can we go home, please?
Look, there's a Jeep over there. Go write them a ticket, Kyle.
But, Dad, I want...
Now, Kyle!
Oh, hey, Kyle. Hey, dude. What are you doing here? Helping my dad pick out some cool new power tools. What are you doing? Helping my dad give people fake tickets.
What's this?
Oh, sorry, Randy. Looks like you got a ticket.
A ticket? Failure to care about the environment.
Oh, goddammit. Did you do this, Gerald? Yeah, I'm just, you know, trying to make people more aware. You know, it's...
You got some nerve, you know that? Where do you come off ticketing people?
Randy, calm down. It's not a real ticket.
I know it's not a real ticket.
Dad, let's just go.
Look, I'm just trying to make the people of South Park aware of a very serious problem.
The problem, Gerald, is that ever since you got a hybrid car, you've gotten so smug that you love the smell of your own farts.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't think it was high and mighty to care about the Earth.
And that, too. Stop talking with your eyes closed. That's what smug people do.
Well, I really don't see how that has anything to do with
that. There, like that. Stop that.
Who the hell put this faggy fake ticket on my truck?
All right, that does it. Come on, Kyle. I don't want you hanging around with these ignorant idiots.
Yeah, that first clip there, it's just, you know, the beginning of the actual show, and one of the kids' dads has gotten a hybrid car and, you know, he's taking them out to put fake tickets on people's cars about not caring about the environment and so on. And it's the key thing there with the sanctimony is that his position is a circular one. It's just, I'm better than you because I've got a hybrid car, and there's no justification for why that actually makes him better, or, you know, why he can then tell other people why they should do it or whatnot. There's nothing about that at all. It's just the sanctimonious position that he takes. And then, of course, you know, he resorts to the Nad Hominem attack at the end, saying, you know, let's not gonna let you hang around with these, you know, ignorant idiots at the end of it as well. And so, and obviously he's so full of himself that he likes the smell of his own farts, which comes into play later on in the episode.
Yeah, I must admit to sniggering through the whole thing. I also remember the days of my youth when I used to shove potatoes up the exhaust of cars and think how much more fun that was than putting fake tickets on
fake
the windscreen.
Fake tickets, that's right, yeah. You should just put sugar in their petrol tanks. That'll teach them a lesson, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the next bit, because he can't stand living with such ignorant idiots, he moves his whole family to somewhere where everyone's really enlightened, San Francisco. So we'll play that bit of the clip now.
We noticed your hybrid out front. That's a V-series, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, nice car, but we're going to have to get you into the BT-series. Its emissions are actually cleaner.
Wow, so everyone here drives a hybrid, huh?
Oh, of course. We're a little more progressive and ahead of the curve here in San Francisco. Anyway, I'm sure you'll find it much better here.
Yes, you'll find that San Francisco is pretty much more open-minded and grown up than the Midwest. We're just a little bit more protective of our environment here in San Francisco.
Man, I still remember seeing that for the first time.
I was laughing so hard my stomach hurt.
Yeah.
And I must admit, I actually boosted the audio on the flatulent.
Yeah, the eruptions were very difficult to avoid when you're rolling on the floor laughing.
Yeah. But that just sums up perfectly. They think they're so good at their own farts.
But some, you know, sometimes all the sophistication about our commentaries about the structure of arguments and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's just,
I mean, sometimes there are, like, passing gas is just the most beautiful statement of irony. But actually, that's the best statement of irony I think I've ever seen.
Oh, it is.
It's so crude and it's so unanswerable. You know, like, people can say, oh, yeah, but people that own SUVs don't really smell their farts. But it's too late, you know. It's made the statement.
And you're just like, no, it's a metaphor for how good they think they are.
That's right. Yeah.
It's a bloody clever one.
Yeah.
And extremely wrong. Yeah, okay. Anyway, so they've moved to San Francisco, and the problem is, of course, that when you get so smug, you actually produce smug. And perhaps it's something to do with, you know, continually smelling your own flatulence. So in the next clip, he's one of the characters, his best mate Kyle is the kid who moved to San Francisco, and he wants to get him to come back to South Park. So in order to do that, he needs to try and get everyone in South Park to drive hybrid cars. So, Kyle's family will think that South Park's now enlightened and can come home. So he decides to write a song to encourage people to drive hybrids.
All right, all you dreamers and creamers out there in South Park, I'm going to play a song by a local artist that really made me think about my impact on the Earth. This is Stan Marsh with Hey People, You Gotta Drive Hybrids Already.
Come on, people now, people now, people now, come on, people now. Got to drive hybrids, people now, people now, people now, people now. Hybrids are for people now, people now. Good for people driving, people now. Get a hybrid, be good people now.
He's right.
Jimbo, you got a hybrid too?
Yeah, I just wanted to try to set an example, you know?
Yeah, I guess it's up to us to show everyone the way. Good for you.
Thanks.
Can you believe some people still don't drive hybrids?
I know. It's like Earth to America. Hello? This is simple stuff here. Call.
Good for you.
Thanks.
At least we're smart enough to know better.
Thanks.
Come on, everybody, be people now.
Hello there, I'm Ranger McFriendly. I'm the person who watches over the delicate ecosystem of South Park. You must be the little boy who wrote that song.
Yeah.
Ow!
You son of a bitch! Do you have any idea what you've done?
What?
Come with me! There, look!
Smog? There's never been smog over South Park before.
Don't you get it? When people drive hybrid cars, they get so full of themselves that they spew tons of self-satisfied garbage into the air. That isn't smog. It's smug!
Smug?
Hybrid cars make better for emission levels, but people who drive hybrid cars are the leading cause of smug. You get enough smug in the atmosphere, and you know what that leads to? Global laming. Thanks to your gay little song, South Park is now the second smuggiest city in America! Now take a look at this.
What is that?
It's the smug from George Clooney's acceptance speech at the Academy Awards.
George Clooney's acceptance speech?
Did you hear it? He talked about how people in Hollywood are ahead of the curve on social matters. He even took credit for the civil rights movement. Look, the point is, the smug from his acceptance speech has been slowly drifting north since he gave it, and it's headed straight for the supercell. The South Park and San Francisco smug is already at critical mass. If it gets hit by George Clooney's acceptance speech, it will be a disaster of epic proportions. The perfect storm of self-satisfaction.
The perfect storm of self-satisfaction.
I love the Earth to America. Hello.
Yeah, hello, Earth to America. And I think
that you know same, that yeah. The other thing, sorry, I just wanted to say that lame got in there as well.
And lame, perfectly. Yeah,
did it perfectly. Like, look at me, everybody.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Your lame-ass gay song.
Yeah.
No, it is important to note that most of the characters, strictly speaking, weren't using the fallacious trying to win an argument sanctimony. They were just being sanctimonious the entire time. But when they were explaining how they were more enlightened than everybody, just the circularity of what they were saying, there was no justification for why they chose to drive hybrid cars. It was just, Earth to America, come on, this is simple stuff, people. You know, they don't give any justification. They just are more enlightened and morally superior to everybody else. Yeah. And then, of course, the hilarious bit about George Clooney's Oscar speech. All right. Anyway, again, to not this bit proves, and I use the word prove with inverted commas around it, that we are not right wing death beats, because this last bit of the clip is exactly what I believe. And it's the end of the episode when South Park, they always give their moral message a lot of the time in these episodes, and you know the perfect storm of smugness goes through South Park and destroys it. And destroys their cars, and so they're discussing what they're going to do now in the cleanup the characters are. So I'll play that bit of the clip now.
We're all going to need new cars.
And let's make sure nobody gets a stupid hybrid, right?
No! Hybrid cars are a good thing!
But hybrid cars are the leading cause of smug.
Okay. Hybrid cars don't cause smugness. People do. Look, hybrid cars are important. They may even save our planet one day. What you all need to do is just learn to drive hybrids and not be smug about it.
You mean drive in hybrids, but not act like we're better than everyone else because of it?
Yeah!
I'm not ready.
I don't think I can do it either.
It's simply asking too much. Perhaps one day we can learn to drive hybrids without being smug about it. But for now, the technology is just too much for us.
Come on, everybody! Let's go buy wasteful gas guzzlers! Yeah!
Come on, everybody, let's go buy wasteful gas guzzlers. The technology is not there yet.
Let's go buy gas guzzlers.
Yeah, that sums it up perfectly. And so, you know, lead by example, but don't pretend you're better than anyone by doing it.
I had a brainstorm actually while it was all unfolding, as I sometimes do. And it occurred to me that if you did want to drive a six-cylinder four-wheel drive around the city, that all you have to do is put a bicycle rack on the back and put a couple of bicycles there. And you would really confuse the sanctimonious people who drive hybrids, because they would assume if the bicycles were there. And in fact, you could leave them in there permanently and never use them. You could even weld the wheels shut, you know, I mean, so they couldn't turn and so on. But that would be a way of sort of being part of both camps. Like, you're a four-wheel drive driver, so you'd be accepted by that group. but you're also a bicyclist. So you'd be sort of acceptable to the low-energy type consumption people.
Yeah, well, I glued my surfboards under the roof of my car, but that was just to look cool.
I thought it was your skis.
No, in Brisbane, yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
All right. What we'll next look at, because specifically with what I was talking about just then, was the fact that, you know, you're making these assumptions about people and you don't know their situation, you don't know their financial situation and so on. And so what we'll do is look at quite an amusing example. It comes from the TV show Penn and Teller Bullshit. So first of all, anyone who's not familiar with this show, there is a lot of swearing in it. It's highly amusing and it's highly polemic. They're polemicists as well. Penn and Teller are magicians, skeptics. If you don't know who they are, you should really look them up on YouTube. They're really funny. And they go off on diatribes. And this one little example, they show these sanctimonious Walmart haters, Walmart being the big chain store in the US, who basically, you know, and I'll put a link to the actual YouTube clip because you've got to actually watch it as well. So you can listen to it now, but you really need to watch it because that just, it's yeah, you're jaw-droppingly funny because of the actual people who are these sanctimonious Walmart haters. So we'll play this bit of the clip now. But like I said, make sure you go and actually watch it as well.
We found these two giving the finger to a Walmart in the tiny town of Cinnabar, Washington.
Of course we hate Walmart. Walmart is destroying our little town. Chanel, Shay, St. Pierre, and I hate Walmart.
Taraka Zabrinsky, I hate Walmart. It's the dollar, it's not the people.
These two despise Walmart so much, they run a website that sells anti-Walmart t-shirts out of this copy shop.
I do it because I have children. And I want them to know that what Walmart is doing isn't right, that they should do better for their employees and for the community.
The community? Oh, like the people who shop at Walmart.
And these are the people that shop at Walmarts. You know, you got Joe Bob Jim here, who's got, you know, buck teeth and the typical, you know, hat. And you got Mom here with her cigarette and her curlers and her horde of children.
You know, I'm rarely speechless, but what do you think of Walmart workers?
They remind me of the Nazis in the morning. Their Walmart cheer that they do. Hi, Walmart.
These are jobs that, you know, a monkey could do. And why give a monkey a raise when you can just get another monkey off the street to do the same job?
Lots more monkeys. There are always more monkeys.
And I don't know if you've noticed or not, but some of those greeters aren't exactly spring chickens. You really got to be scraping the bottom to work here in the first place.
See here.
So you two, t-shirt pasting f***tards, think you're superior to the people who stock shelves and run cash registers and work 40 hours a week to feed their families? F*** you both in the f***ing neck.
That is so good. The bit where he goes, I'm rarely speechless, but because you just like, this is why you have to watch it, people. Okay, you got to go watch it.
Yeah,
the two people who are backing Walmart look like I won't just go look what they look like. You know, and they're bagging out the people at Walmart for what they look like. It's hilarious. Pot calling kettle black, I believe is the expression. And then at the end, but as they sum it up nicely, you know, people are working there to feed their families. People are shopping there if I'm assuming if it's like, you know, a typical chain store in Australia, because they get decent prices to, you know, to clothe their family as well. And so there might be a problem with the entire system. There might not be, but you can't actually bag out those individual peoples, and you can't assume that you are morally superior to people who are trying to look after, earn a living and look after their own family. I mean, that is the height of morality, as far as I'm concerned, is making sure you're doing a good job for your family. I mean, yeah, all right. Now this other bit from Penn and Teller is about PETA, which is PETA being the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals. And this is their actual name is the fallacy of sanctimony by definition, because they use the word ethical in their name. And so automatically they get the high moral ground. And if you put an argument against PETA, you're arguing against ethical people. So immediately they have the advantage by putting that in their name. So we'll just play another little bit from Penn & Teller's show Bullshit. Again, language alert, but I will beep out all the swearing so you can play it to your kiddies.
These folks are supporters of a group called PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. We call our show Bull, so you know what you're getting. But what do you get with a group that puts ethical right in its name? Ethical means moral or proper, which differs for every person. It's something to discuss. It's not an absolute. It just sounds nice. It's like pro-choice and pro-life. I mean, come on! Everyone is pro-choice and pro-life. It's for or against abortion that your group is about, and who wouldn't want to treat animals ethically anyway? I mean, nobody gets off slapping their monkey or choking their chicken or roughing up their clam. But just like a lot of animals, we think other animals are good to eat. We noticed that during this episode, we were able to tell which side of the debate someone was on by their girth.
So Penn & Teller, some people have a problem with them because, you know, they are pretty hardcore and they're pretty militant in the skepticism, and they do take extreme examples, but you've got to admit they get their message across and they are bloody funny as well. And but, I mean, as they said rightly there, by putting that name ethical in their name, I mean, they're immediately assuming that high moral ground. And the rest of their clip on PETA, they expose some really dodgy and hypocritical practices as well. And I will come back to PETA some more of that clip in another future podcast on moral equivalence, because they later on compare owning a pet with slavery and stuff like that. So
with PETA, for example, I'm very sympathetic to the aims of the, in Australia it's called the RSPCA, the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. And I think they're in the right domain as far as their responses towards animal cruelty is concerned. Whereas PETA's so extreme that, I could never find myself joining them even for some of their campaigns, which I happen to agree with, like battery hens and so on, because they're just so extreme. So it's not a matter of being kind to animals or ethical to animals or not. It's a matter of striking the right balance where they fall down.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, with PETA, they are, so dogmatic in particular views, particular worldviews, and the logic they follow is really quite bizarre, and it falls down on a lot of things. Even just, say, people who don't like experimentation on animals, to go a little off topic, but of course, the research that goes into animals is not just going to, help humans, it will help animals as well, other animals, because they learn from what they do and they can learn to treat other animals. Oh, you serious? Did you lose everything? At this point in the podcast, Jeff's computer crashed, and luckily we're able to salvage pretty much the entire podcast up until this point, just before I was signing off anyway. We're able to do that because there are the complete utter legends out there, and I mean that. Thank you, whoever you are, mysterious stranger, that write computer programs that enable you to salvage material that was stored in temp files. So at this point, I'm going to say bye, just in case Jeff's computer crashes again, although given I'm using my own, that's probably not going to worry affect me too much. Schadenfreude. The guilty pleasures of humbug.
Okay, so you managed to recover it. That's great. And we're off here now, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're finished. Just before we ring off, I just couldn't have done it again if we'd lost it, because just dumbing down my vocabulary every week for these listeners, you know, like we're assuming they have a mental age of 10, and it's really difficult to get across some of these concepts.
Sometimes it is, yeah. I mean, and the thing is, like, if it wasn't for you know, there are some geniuses out there, like people who can write, you know, having the program crash but being able to recover the data so people can write those programs are bloody geniuses. And occasionally, you know, I think, oh, crap, you know, geez, there must be a lot of people out there smarter than me. But then I think, well, not really. I mean, they have a particular field of knowledge, but if I was to, you know, like, put, for example, my intellect and what I know in a kind of volume, you know, I kind of think, imagine the hangar for the Saturn V rocket from the Apollo program, and my knowledge would kind of just fit into that. Now, admittedly, that the entire knowledge of that there is to be known in the universe would be like, again, shrink mine down into a matchbox and then put that in the Saturn V rocket warehouse. And you'd be obviously the same, on the similar kind of order of magnitude as me. So, you know, yeah, I don't know a lot in terms of the entire universe knowledge, but other people's knowledge would be the matchbox within my warehouse.
Yeah, you know? I the metaphor I have in mind is like it's I'm in a warehouse or some kind of enclosed space, and I've got these magnificent ideas coming out all the time. Mm. Like they just come all the time. And the people all around me are just like cockroaches, you know. It's like talking to cockroaches. Yeah. It's useful to talk to them because it helps you clarify your own ideas. But yeah, as far as the cockroaches themselves being able to make use of those ideas,
well,
it's just never
going
to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, I find that's the thing about having to pretend to pretend that other people's ideas have any kind of merit or value. In order to not appear sanctimonious is what I find really difficult. You know, I've become quite a good actor. I mean, you are one of the greatest actors, of course, I've ever met. But, I mean, acting isn't exactly difficult as opposed to
actors. Oh, no, no. Well, actors just simply spruik other people's lines. And
I mean, they stand where they're told.
When you're watching a rubbish
show, that's
right. When you're watching a rubbish show, you've got to remember that the writer of the show is rubbish, is dumb.
Yeah.
But the actor is dumb by several orders.
He's even dumber.
Several orders of magnitude dumber than the actual writer, because all the actor does.
And
it's just
look, again, I already said it to you before, but man, you are on tonight. I mean, you are so good.
Oh, it's pearls before swine. That's the trouble, see. Like, us talking to each other is always of value. And if other people can kind of listen in, some of them will benefit. You know, some of them will benefit at some time. So, something will sink through that thick, you know, the thick skulls out there. But it's just such a privilege talking to you about these sort of things, even though we have to dumb down our vocabulary, you know.
But given the number of downloads we get a week, which admittedly is pretty minimal, I would guess at least one person out there listening per episode would comprehend what we're saying and understand it. But just because, you know, we're probably in the top percentile, which means that if there's 100, say, downloads, there's one other person of equal to us who's listening to it.
Yeah,
so whoever they are,
I think,
you know,
I'd
love to hear from them, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I think you've got to discount the fact, too, that many of the downloads are like chimpanzees playing keyboard, you know.
They've just accidentally
hit a button that results in a download. But I kind of ignore that factor, and I sort of take pride from all the downloads, but I know some of them are actual chimpanzees who are accidentally hitting that.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, I suppose we should go.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Next
all
week.
Right.
Yep.
Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. Next week. Okay. And we'll.
Yeah. Feed the chooks. All right. The trouble is I can hardly stop doing that sort of stuff. Like.
All right. That was cool.
Okay. Bye.
So that was the episode on sanctimony. As I said, it was really fantastic. If you didn't enjoy that, then really you need to take a long, hard look at yourself in a mirror, or do it at whatever it is you do to examine your own internal state of being. Hopefully it's also really becoming quite abundantly clear that I'm making this up as I go along off the cuff, so apologies for just insulting you then potentially. All right then, I'll see you in a fortnight, hopefully.